What is up, podcast people and soundtrack geniuses around the world? You are listening to The Soundcast, the official podcast of TrackSounds.com. I'm your host, Christopher Coleman, and on this interview edition of The Soundcast, I speak with composer Brian Tyler. Brian Tyler is a composer and conductor of over 60 films. He won our very own Q Award for Film Composer of the Year in 2013. He's written original scores for film, TV, and video games such as the Fast and Furious franchise, Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Now You See Me, The Expendables, Rambo, and games such as Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, the Assassin's Creed franchise. In TV, he's done the theme for Hawaii Five-0 and the NFL theme for ESPN. His most recent projects include the adrenaline-laden Furious 7 and Avengers Age of Ultron. His most recent work for TV debuted on June 15, 2015, as he has composed a new and original theme for Fox's coverage of the 2015 U.S. Open. In this interview, he talks about his passion for sports and how for his U.S. Open theme, he wanted to rekindle some of the heroic magic sown by composers like John Williams and his anthemic and unforgettable work for the Olympics. And at the end of part one of this interview, you can hear a clip from his U.S. Open theme. This is a two-part interview, and in part one, I also talked to Brian Tyler about what it's like for him several weeks removed from having two mega box office hits and the short-lived spotlight of today's packed summer blockbuster schedule. You'll also hear him answer the simple but carefully selected question: if you had to choose one to write a score for, which would it be? Star Trek or Star Wars? In part two, you will hear Brian Tyler talk more about the Avengers Age of Ultron and Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can find all of our episodes of The Soundcast on TrackSounds.com, or you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn Radio. You can always contact us by emailing us at soundcast@tracksounds.com, on Twitter at twitter.com/tracksounds, or on Facebook. Now, here is part one of our interview with Brian Tyler. So the last time we talked is, we didn't talk in 2014, which is
We didn't.
We talked at the end of 2013. We talked about Thor: The Dark World.
That's the last time. Okay, so yeah, we didn't do a Turtles thing or something like that.
I think we may have talked about it coming up, but we didn't go into it in full.
Yeah.
You know, we saved it. We saved some things up for a nice discussion today, though.
Yeah.
And so what I was thinking about, you know, we're kind of a few weeks past Avengers Age of Ultron, and a few weeks more past Furious 7. I've never kind of done an interview this many weeks out from like the release.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, is there still an afterglow for you with either or both of those titles? I mean, there should be, as Avengers got $1.3 billion, I think it's done, and $1.5 billion for Furious 7. So I'm imagining there's some afterglow there. But
there's definitely, you know, it's really interesting seeing. Oh gosh, you know, it's funny. I just looked on the. You're right. Gosh, wow. you know, it's always interesting to kind of step back and watch how the public takes it on, because usually when you know you're working on it, it's very hard to see, through the crystal ball and see how people are going to react, because you really, you know, I get really attached to my movies. And, you know, you work on them really hard, and people will have all sorts of opinions. They'll see a film and they'll have a, you know, you can see a 40 character tweet review, or just right. a offhanded one sentence of, oh, this movie was that, or the score was this, or just kind of boil it down to, you know, a 3-second soundbite when you've been working on it for, you know, a year and a half.
Yeah.
And so it's you kind of have a bit of suspense going into the release of a film, and So this is a bit of a different perspective, you know, talking about something after it's come out, and now we've seen the public response, which has been great, and, you know, both Avengers and Age of Ultron and Furious 7, there's anticipation for the films, mm-hmm. but you just don't know, and I really believed in both of them so much, and it is crazy to see that, what is it, on the all-time box office, it looks like Furious 7 is right about tied for third with the original Avengers right now, and mm-hmm. Age of Ultron is sneaking right up on it right after. I mean, it is crazy, the number one and two movies of 2015 so far.
Yeah.
And we had no idea, you know. I mean, we felt that they would do well, but I think there was a very much an emotional response to Furious 7. You know, it was something that we finished the movie. I was on that movie so long ago, you know, in 2013.
Yeah.
Probably about halfway through 2013, and then when Paul passed away, we didn't even know if we'd finished the film, and we were actually thinking we wouldn't. But talking with his family and kind of getting a feel of maybe what Paul would have wanted, we thought, well, why don't we just, we'll do this film and we'll make it a tribute to Paul, and it'll be a send-off for him and his character Brian.
Sure.
And so after all of that, I think that people somehow so in a sense, it's not that we didn't care how people would react, but we didn't do it for that reason,
right?
And that all the way down to the musical choices, we really wanted it to feel like a celebration of Paul, and so the fact that it did so unbelievably well, it really, in a way, it gives me a lot of hope about, you know, making films kind of the way that you feel is the right way, and kind of not worrying too much about what necessarily, you know, about checking every, ticking every box of what test screenings say or whatever it was, because it really sure. wasn't done that way. And also, you know, with so that's been amazing. And then Avengers is, you know, such a juggernaut, and for me, there is a lot emotionally invested in that too, because I've been such a part of the Marvel universe, and there's two of my characters in the film, you know, Iron Man and Thor,
yeah.
in there,
yeah.
and then, you know, really wanting it to, you know, me having a lot of respect for Alan and his original score, and wanting to incorporate that as well, and Captain America, and all these things, and then coming up with all these new themes for Ultron and Vision, and there's so much more going on that was a big responsibility as well. But again, when you're working on it, you know, we all just were kind of trying to make the Avengers an Avengers film, which is kind of the second, you know, it's the second film in this series. It's kind of like our, you know, Empire Strikes Back, in a sense, you know, and
right.
And how do we pull that off? So again, we really, it's really hard to tell how the audience is going to respond, and is it going to be one of those things that really connects? And so to see both of these films doing about, gosh, it's like they're going to be over $3 billion in box office between the two movies.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's just kind of doesn't even, my brain does not calculate that kind of math, because, you know, I come from the indie world and working on, you know, movies like Bubba Hotep and Six
right.
String. Those are my roots, and I always kind of threw myself into films headlong, and it was really about trying to do something cool and special, and it has never really been about a box office or anything. And I mean, even so far as doing Partition, you know, film about India and
yeah.
The Break and some of these smaller films I really love doing. So it's always been trying to kind of find the projects that I love to do something with. So when I see something like that happen, it still kind of shocks me, you know, when, you know, and
sure.
And I people send me these links to lists of Box Office Mojo and things. That's what I clicked on. I clicked on an email, actually, when you called me, just to see, because you had mentioned that. And I was like, oh, let me see. And I clicked
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
And there it is. And there's Iron Man 3 also sitting there.
Yeah.
eighth all time. And so it's fun to see, but it does give kind of that afterglow feeling. And also it's fun to see the music live on, and you see people, you know, I've seen a lot of concert works of this music, and I've seen people kind of, people getting into the music on their own and doing tributes and cover band, because people do covers of the pieces. So when there is a bit of interesting after effect when you work on a movie that continues sometimes for years.
Sure.
And so that's been a really cool part of this summer for me as well.
It's kind of sad in a way. I mean, you know, you have a film Furious 7, which, you know, is just been a juggernaut, as you called it. And then, you know, like 4 weeks later, here comes Avengers 2. And it's sad in a way. I mean, what a problem to have. You know, you have two huge films with, you know, two really big scores attached to them. But it is still, in a way, a problem in that, you know, people can't savor, because we're on to the next thing so fast. And that's why I asked this question, because it's like, you know, back in the day, you know, 1977, Star Wars comes out. There were no other, you know, I don't even know the next major, quote unquote, blockbuster movie that came out after that. I mean, it was months and months of listening to one score and one score only. Same with Superman the next year. It's just like that's all you listen to. But now it's like, if you don't get your money in and make your mark within the first couple of weeks, there's something bigger, maybe not better, but bigger coming. And so that's kind of a shame in one way. And so that's why I wanted to ask you that, to see if, did all the questions about Fury 7 go away as soon as Avengers 2 came out, or were you still getting a lot of interest in Fury 7?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's interesting that you mentioned 1977, because there is Star Wars later this year. But in terms of the summer, it's like the Avengers: Age of Ultron is kind of the Star Wars of this summer. And then, you know, I think that Close Encounters came out on Christmas.
Yes,
that year,
that's right.
77. And you had other, like, you know, the things that were, you know, kind of, maybe Saturday Night Fever was that year, but kind of other big films that weren't like, there's nothing like Star Wars, you know,
right.
and now it ran forever. I think, you know, it even had, I think in its opening, they did like a kind of a, it wasn't a super wide release. They wanted it to be on big screens, and there was only limited, and so so people would stand in these huge lines. And now there's so many screens, it's different. You have huge impact at the beginning, and pretty much in whatever country it shows, people have seen it in the first 2 weeks that are going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you work on a film for so long, and it's kind of like bam, and before you know it, it's out and it's there, and then the next thing comes along. You try to savor it as much as you can, but it surpasses quickly. And of course, you know, if you're working in this business and you want to keep on going, you typically do keep really busy. And I went right into writing the U.S. Open, the USGA theme that there's going to be used.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is new news. I think you're the first to hear about it.
Yes.
I always love sports iconic themes. And
yeah.
To me, the one that really hit me originally, I remember one, was I always loved the – I was particularly fond of like you mentioned, tennis. The Wimbledon theme I always loved.
Right.
But the one that really hit me and the one that I connect to, and this piece that I've done kind of connects to that, is the John Williams 1984 Olympic theme.
Oh.
And to give it that kind of historic, you know, pageantry kind of the idea that... you have this. It's interesting because with films, you watch the films over and over when you're working on them, and there's kind of a outcome, and you have an arc. But with doing a sports theme and trying to make it iconic, and we're trying to do this thing so it lasts for years and years and years, and is always associated with is going to be kind of like the golf, you know, theme, is that the idea is that there's that this sport, and all sports do, but in particular individual sports, there's this epic struggle, there's a challenge, there's history and those legends that came before you, mm-hmm. there's the heartbreak of what happens when you lose it at the last moment and victory escapes you, and then you have the elation of victory and all that. So so it was kind of cool. It's because I just finished Avengers.
Yeah.
And you know, which had kind of, you know, a very much of a superhero scope, and then going into something that had, you know, really some, it's big orchestra and it's got, it has all that power, but it had to be really emotional and for this USGA theme or US Open. And so anyway, I've been working on that, and that's going to be, in fact, there'll be a preview of the piece. I did a long suite. It's like 6 minutes. It's a uh-huh. kind of in the way that it could be a concert piece, but there'll be a preview up. That's like a 1 minute version coming up in the next week.
Nice.
You know, it's something that, that was kind of like as you're saying, as the films, this call came from, as films come out, and no matter how big they are, you kind of, there's like the next thing. Well, I can't escape that I spent so much time on Avengers and Furious 7 that they still are on my mind, and I still kind of live with it every day, and I'm always checking up to see how everyone's liking it, and I read reviews sometimes, and I try not to take them personally if they don't like it or if they do like it or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just it's hard to not want to kind of feel that audience response, because that's exactly why I do music. That's why when a movie opens, I go to the theater and I'm there all weekend. You
right,
know,
right.
And I'm facing the wrong way, looking at audience reaction. That's what I do. You know, it's my version of, even though I do concerts occasionally and things like that, which I would love to do more of. My version of that is doing music for films or sports or whatever. And the only window I have into reaction really is to really see it viscerally, not people thinking about it and writing a review or trying to be on a message board. And you get people that are haters and lovers, and people talk trash and people say great things, and it's hard to tell either way. But if you really look at people's reactions and to scenes and to the music, and that's why I do it. And,
sure.
And so it's going to be fun to see how this this theme for the USGA is going to pan out. I'm really excited about people hearing it, but it's just something that I dove right into, so I've had almost no time to really to think about it. And of course, I have other films that now I'm doing a movie called Truth.
Hmm. Now You See Me Too.
Yeah, Now You See Me Too, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, there's just this whole line of things. But
yeah.
Also, shifting gears is important, I think.
Yeah.
You know, with Furious 7 and Avengers were very, very different score-wise. This mm-hmm. this USGA theme is much more like a towards, like, you know, Olympic-style kind of music theme, you know, very. And then this movie Truth, which is a political true story thriller about a scandal that happened at CBS News, is kind of with the Iraq War.
Hmm.
It's a true story. Mary Mapes is played by Kate Blanchett, and Dan Rather is played by Robert Redford.
Whoa.
And it ended Dan Rather's career at CBS. And so it's kind of this, all the president's men meets, you know, like a kind of, you know, these political thriller type of things, that it's true story, really riveting, but the music obviously has to be very different. As these films come out and come and go, I'm kind of keeping busy doing, you know, the next thing, but also kind of just checking up on how the films I've done or the projects I've done have been, how they've been going, you know.
I'm just curious if you know, when you have these, you know, you do scores from, as you mentioned, indie films, small films, and then these huge mega films. Do, just in general, do the sales of those respective soundtracks kind of track with that, or is it completely not?
It generally does. Like, if you loosely charted it, there's kind of a, you know, but sometimes they overperform some smaller ones that I do, in a sense. There have been a few movies that are notably overperformed in terms of soundtrack. One being Children of Dune, because it was, you know, a TV series, a special miniseries.
Right.
And that did kind of how, you know, kind of ended up being like major blockbuster films did. And another one was Break, which was a super tiny film that had a piece that I did in it. I think it was helped by there was a kind of a music video that was done for that, and that caught on. So you do have sometimes just certain little special ones that kind of find their way to an audience, even if the movie didn't do very well. But you know, things like Iron Man 3 and Thor and Avengers and Furious 7, those all kind of have enough of a coverage that there is that. But I find that there's always a base of people that will go and pick up the soundtrack right away. That's almost like if I look at like pre-sales and things, it's almost identical on all my movies. But that's only emerged in the last maybe 3, 4, or 5 years. And I think that maybe that I have a core group of people that like my music, and they tend to grab it, you know.
No matter what you release now, you kind of know I'm going to do at least this much.
Yeah, there's a base. Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. Of fans, you know, that will get it. And then on top of that, I think that's really where the film, you know, if a film does really well, then I'll get new buyers, you know. It's been growing over, you know, I mean, I've been doing it for a while,
but sure.
But you know, if you
keep growing, yeah.
If you look at things from, you know, 18 years ago or whatever I started, you know, it was a bit different.
Well, I'm curious now. I didn't know you were doing the USGA theme, US Open theme, which is awesome. I didn't know until, well, I think I found out last year sometime, you know, you'd done the opening theme for ESPN's NFL music. So staying on that sports line, how did that come about?
The NFL.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of interesting. That came about after I did Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm. And I think what they were doing is they wanted to rebrand the NFL and do kind of a reset of everything with the music. And funny enough, I guess they were trying out like things like Iron Man 3 and then Thor and some different stuff of mine that they felt, hey, you know, this is pretty cool for NFL type of style, you know, like let's make this superhero-y. And I didn't, of course, I always hear these things later, you know, I don't know they're going on. So they just call it, well, it was one of those things that's, it's funny, the way they tell it, it's actually very similar to the story of the US Open. They had this music, and they had some of my other music for the US Open too, as well as from Greatest Game Ever Played, actually. So they were listening to it, and kind of the conversation was the same in both, apparently, which is the executives got together and the producers, and they really liked the music, and they're like, we want something like, you know, this, you know, like something like Brian Tyler's score or whatever, you know. And then they kind of talked, and then I guess, you know, the moment happens, like, gee, I wonder if he'd be interested in actually just doing it. Why don't we call him?
Yeah.
And of course, I think by now people know, but at the time they might not have, is that I'm a huge sports fan. So it's like, you know, it's, of course. You know, so they call me, and so, you know, we talk about it, and The only thing is, like, you know, if we do something like that, we really want to do it right. We want to do it with a big full orchestra and do something that really has impact. And especially with this new one, it's just one of my proudest moments. I think it's one of my best pieces. And it had to be kind of done right, which, you know, the orchestras cost money and you know. And so it has to be kind of the right situation. Every kind of... it's not always necessarily is it something that can happen, but I was really happy to be brought on both of them. Yeah.
Well, it's awesome. I mean, I heard the theme before I knew anything about you doing it. I was like, wait a minute, just the fact that they had changed it on ESPN, because I watch, you know, every Sunday is like, when the football season's on, that's where I am. And so when I heard, I was like, that's new. And then listening to, I'm like, now, who, I wonder, you know, because I would assume ESPN has some in-house guys, I would think, who write things for some of their, you know, shows and whatnot.
They do.
Yeah. And I thought, but this is way outside of anything I've heard come out of ESPN before. So it wasn't long after that then I did a little research and like, oh, and really surprised, happily surprised to see you behind that one.
Yeah.
and I kind of thought, well, maybe there's, you know, the Disney to Marvel to ESPN, you know, connection, because Disney owns everything.
Yes.
It's like, well, maybe that's how it came about. Which gets me thinking now, it's like, well, you know, Disney owns Marvel and they also own, what's the name of that franchise? Oh, Star Wars. They own Star Wars.
Yeah,
and
yeah, so I'm that, like, that thing, yes. That little guy.
That's a nice connection to have there. I mean,
yeah, no doubt about it.
Although you haven't done any Disney films per se, have you?
I have. I've done. Yeah, in fact, I've
you
done.
You did.
I've done two, but they were dramas. I haven't done any like animated Disney kind of things. Because actually, Greatest Game Ever Played.
Oh, that was Disney. Yeah.
And then Annapolis was Disney as well.
Oh, I did not know that.
And so yeah, and then. Yeah, so and other than that, you know, it's been all the Marvel movies, which are Disney, but I think Iron Man 3 was maybe the first, or maybe it was the second film that was Marvel/Disney after it went from Paramount over to Disney. But it's been, because I mean, basically, I've spent so much time over in the Disney lot because Marvel is over there now, and so I've spent half of the last year or a year and a half over there. You know, going to screenings and meetings and hanging out with the Marvel folks.
Right.
You know, and that project went till the 11th hour. I mean, I was still doing. I think I did my last queue like 4 days before the premiere or something like that. you know, because the movie was always one of those things that it's such a massive thing. The movie's never finished, really. You know, and you just kind of work right up to the end and
it's an interesting thing to see your name attached. Maybe we did talk after Thor the Dark World. It seemed like I mentioned this before, seeing your name with Justin Lin being on Star Trek 3 or Star Trek Beyond, I forget what it's called now. And then
Star Trek 3, working title.
That's the working title. Okay. And then, you know, having the natural connection of through Disney, Star Wars being a part of Disney, and then the anthology films, all of these films that are going to be coming. I mean, it suffices to say, well, if you had to choose between those franchises.
Oh, gosh.
Could you make that
it's
choice?
Impossible. Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean,
because JJ's done both.
Yeah, anyone that knows anything about just me and just personally in my life, I mean, like I am such a massive Star Trek and Star Wars fan. Like, for instance, I grew up completely like, you know, when anyone ever asked me, what's your favorite movie? What's your favorite score? All that stuff. I always, for all my life, is at Star Wars, you know, Empire Strikes Back, right behind it. Right. And then for me, in terms of me watching series, I'm not just kind of sort of a Trekker. Like I am the guy that I have every series You know, every episode of every series that I have, I just go through, and it's my comfort food. I literally go through classic TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, through all the episodes, and I just loop back around, and I pretty
that's
much
awesome.
Every few days, I mean, it used to be like it was every day when I go to sleep, I would watch and I just go through chronologically, and I probably loop through the entire, you know, you're talking about an average of, I mean, you had the first series, you got three seasons, then you have seven seasons, and then three, you know, with all the series, and I would just kind of cycle around and do that. Now that's pretty obsessive.
It is.
for being a Trek fan, especially when some people say, well, I don't really like Voyager. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I love
about?
Voyager. That's my favorite, to
yeah,
be honest.
I love Janeway, and I love the characters, and it's emotional, and it's fantastic, and I love the incredible intensity of the political battles of DS9, and then you have TNG is so amazing, and I love Picard. So I have a love of all the series, but the fact is that this is coming from a guy that's a massive Star Wars fan. Now,
right.
So like the people usually fall into two camps, you know. But for me, I have never been able to, nor will I, like, kind of decide. You know, they're both awesome. So you know.
Up until now, though, the opportunity for anyone to do something Star Wars, at least, you know, feature film, was pretty small. And Star Trek was much, there's much more there, opportunity there. But now that's changed.
And, yeah, it has. Yeah.
I mean, it would be brilliant to see your name attached either.
Yeah,
I do challenge your Star Trek fandom in one regard. I did not hear you name the animated series.
No, I got that.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No, I have that set too. Yeah,
okay.
And it's something my music editor and I love the Star Trek animated series.
And
it's funny, I mean, it literally is such an extension of classic, you know, to me.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, not only do you have the original voices and all that, but I mean, literally, you know, and I have those so down committed to memory. This is how insane it is. I always need something to take my mind off things and I'm going to sleep. So I usually have something in or whatever. Now, the cool thing is I don't have to keep my eyes open. I can put on a little like headset and listen to any of these, including the animated series, and I just listen to it because I know exactly.
And you can run the images in your mind.
Absolutely,
that's
you know?
Awesome.
I'll just put it on, and you know, it's cool it's cool. It's like having basically like a whole other. I know, I think animated was like two seasons, but it's really ended up total. If you combine the episodes, it's like 22 or something. It's like
it's a short run.
It's a short run, but it was like having another season of classic.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
And then it gets even deeper. I listen to the audiobooks of the fan fiction.
Oh my gosh. Dude.
Anyway.
That's insane. That's awesome though.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know there were audiobooks of fan fiction though.
There's some really cool ones of Voyager, there's DS9 and
Okay. Wow.
In fact, Kate Mulgrew does one of them. She narrates it and
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's pretty cool, yeah.
Well, you defeated the challenge quite thoroughly. you trounced it quite thoroughly.
You've been listening to part one of our two-part interview with composer Brian Tyler. Be on the lookout for part two coming very soon, and you can find out more about Brian Tyler's projects on his official website at briantyler.com. or following him at Twitter, at Brian Tyler Music. To close out this episode, we're going to give you a taste of his original new theme for Fox's coverage of the 2015 U.S. Open. But first, once again, this is Christopher Coleman, and you can find all of our episodes of this here soundcast at tracksounds.com, or you can subscribe to it, make it easy on yourself, on iTunes, or on Stitcher Radio, or TuneIn Radio. You can always contact us by email at soundcast@tracksounds.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at TrackSounds, or you can find us on Facebook. If you want to follow me personally, you can do so at C. Coleman. Now, without further ado, here is Brian Tyler's opening theme for the 2015 U.S. Open.